time to have some fun, Mike.
Okay, what are we going
to
do?
We're going to talk about words. In fact, we're going to feast on words. Come on.
Fun.
We love words.
Words. Yay.
I love the title here, Feast on Words.
Okay.
Mastering English through delicious idioms.
Oh, delicious idioms.
Yes.
Now that's more interesting. Those are tasty words.
Tasty words that, well, they bring out the culture of a certain, bring out the flavor of a certain culture.
Absolutely.
I used flavor, right? Yeah. So when you use these food idioms, a lot of times you can kind of see where they came from, what the history was, and you can understand why it shows up in the language. And I definitely love food idioms. They're a lot of fun.
Yes. Don't worry about it. It's going to be a piece of cake. It's going to be easy as pie. There's two more food idioms for you.
There you go.
As we're going to get into some of these very common expressions that people use. Of course, they have their roots in the kitchen, in food preparation or, you know, ingredients, foods that we eat, but we use them in many ways outside of sort of a cooking or food type of situation, and it's going to be really interesting. It'll not only help you make your English more flavorful, it will add all sorts of new menu items to the buffet of your language. We'll also learn about the history of it, which is interesting to me because, you know, these are expressions that Leah and I use as native English speakers probably quite frequently, but kind of where did it start from?
That's always a question.
We often don't think about
the etymology of things,
exactly.
Right? The origin of things.
So let's get into some historical food idioms. They will be delicious, and they will also be something that you will find adding nutrients to your English communication.
Ooh, so good, so good. Let's listen to the first section now.
Feast on Words, Mastering English Through Delicious Idioms. English is filled with idioms derived from food, and understanding these expressions can significantly enhance your linguistic fluency. These expressions not only make communication more vivid, but also reflect the cultural and historical contexts from which they emerge. Let's start with bring home the bacon. This expression can be traced back to 12th century England, where a husband who treated his wife kindly was said to be rewarded with bacon by a local church. The idiom gradually shifted in meaning and is now used to describe earning money to support one's household. Today you might say, after years of studying, Alice finally brought home the bacon with her new engineering job. All right, so we have our article, Feast on Words. When we feast, we're usually eating food in large amounts, often at some kind of celebration, like a wedding feast or something like that. But here, we can also use it as a verb, as we are here. To feast is to basically enjoy eating words and eating lots of words. Now, of course, we're not really eating words. We're just enjoying the words the way you enjoy your food. And as it says more precisely, we're mastering English through delicious idioms. So yes, improving our English through idioms, through expressions that trace their roots back to food and food preparation. So let's get into it. It says English is filled with idioms derived from food, and understanding these expressions can significantly enhance your linguistic fluency. So yeah, that's a pretty good setup sentence about what we'll be talking about and learning about both today and tomorrow. English is filled with these idioms, these expressions, a way of sort of, you know, expressing an idea that's kind of neat and simple and easy to remember. And they derive from food. They come from, that is where they trace their history, their origins back to. So when we're talking about something that's changed over time and talking about where it began, how it began, that kind of thing, we can say it derived from this thing. It derived from this part of the world, this culture, this country, or this event, or something like that. That's basically where it started, where it traces its history back to. So understanding these expressions can in a great way, enhance or improve your linguistic, your language fluency. And if you're listening to this, if you're practicing English in any way, if you're reading, if you're even on Duolingo or something like that, especially with improving your speech, your speaking ability and your listening ability, that is fluency, the ease with which and the comfort and the confidence with which you use a language or other things. You know, you can have fluency in computer code. You can have fluency in, online shopping websites. You kind of know how they work. You are very comfortable with them. But generally, we use it for language. So as you're improving your language skills, you should be, of course, improving your fluency by also reading articles like this one.
And the fun thing with the fluency that you get from learning these kind of colorful idioms is that you get a sense of the culture that you're visiting or that you're living in, and you get maybe an appreciation for it as well. It says these expressions not only make communication more vivid, so more colorful, more alive, more, you know, just
interesting,
yeah, but also reflect the cultural and historical contexts from which they emerged. And that's kind of basically what I was saying. You get, and what you were saying just a moment ago, is that you get a sense of the culture, or you get a sense of the history of a culture through these idioms when you find out where they came from, what the history is, what the background is. And that's the context. That's where it's from. That's, if you think of, you're doing a test and you have to figure out the answer, then you have to know the context to be able to best answer a question. So maybe you read three sentences, and from that you're supposed to figure out what the fourth sentence would be. If you just had to pick a fourth sentence with nothing before it, then you wouldn't know the context to connect all these sentences together. And that's what you're oftentimes looking for, is a way to connect things together through the context that they are from. Let's start with bring home the bacon. This expression can be traced back to 12th century England, where a husband who treated his wife kindly was said to be rewarded with bacon by a local church. I have never heard that before. I never would have thought that before. I would have thought, oh, you're bringing home the pig that will then maybe feed the family with the bacon. That would have been my thought of it. So it's quite interesting, as we've noticed, how we use these expressions with their more modern usage or meaning, and we don't even know why or where it comes from. Isn't that fascinating?
It is, absolutely. So we're going back almost 1,000 years here to the 1100s in England. And back then, of course, they had laws and rules, but not the way we do today. But they were trying to encourage men to be nice to their wives, which is always a good thing for men to be nice to their wives.
Please.
And maybe even today, more men would be nice to their wives if they were given free bacon by being such a nice guy, such a gentleman. Well, this is the way they did it back then. I guess, you know, domestic violence was probably a bigger problem. They didn't have police forces and courts and things like that. So to encourage men to be nice to their wives, if you were very nice, if you were well known as being a gentleman who treated his wife with great respect, the local church would give you bacon, which of course is a very high fat and very tasty cut of the pig. So that's maybe why we don't say bring home the meat or bring home the pig. We're specifically saying bacon, because who wants to bring home the pig face? Who wants to bring home the trotters, the pig's feet, which you have to cook for a long time, which don't have a lot of meat on them? You know, the bacon is a much richer, much more, you know, valuable and much more enjoyable cut of meat from the pig, from the back bacon or the belly bacon. And of course, that is something that most people would love to have in their pot when they're cooking dinner. It says the idiom, this expression, gradually shifted or changed in meaning and is now used to describe earning money to support one's household. So we've lost that idea of being kind to your wife, your spouse, your family. But it's more about making money. The money, as you said, Leah, that kind of, you know, seems logical. The money that you would need to buy that bacon to bring home is the money that you were earning from your job. And that's how it's used today. So you can still be mean to your wife, apparently, in the modern world. But if you're bringing home the bacon, that means at least you're supplying money for the family to buy food, even if you could be a nicer person.
I like there was a commercial that came out with, I can bring home the bacon, fry it up in a pan. And the idea is that you're not just bringing home the money, but you are taking care of the family and as well.
Cool.
There's more to that one, but it's a funny one.
I have to say making bacon is pretty easy.
Oh my goodness. After years of studying, Alice finally brought home the bacon with her new engineering job.
There you go.
So that's just the use of this idiom in a sentence, right? So she worked hard and she started bringing home the bacon. She started bringing home money that her family could use to live off of. Let's see someone who will bring home the bacon for us, our Chinese teacher. We'll listen to him right now.
Hello, everyone. 我是 Patrick 老师。今天讲解的是 feast on words. 好，这个单元要介绍的是几个和食品相关、食物相关的片语哦。那这些片语反映过去讲英文的社会里面有什么样的历史还有文化。那了解这些片语的历史脉络，我们在使用上会比较自然道地哦。这个单元介绍的呢，如同一开场所说的，都和食物相关，一起来看看吧。今天先看前三则，请看第一个句子。英文里面呢，有很多的惯用语和成语，怎么样呢？ Which are derived from? 那 which are 省略掉了。这些惯用语、成语呢，都是从饮食衍生出来的。好，那我们如果进一步了解这一些讲法的话，会怎么样呢？可以大大的 significantly 大大的呢提升我们的英文流利度 enhance our fluency。 好，那接下来我们来看一下第一个片语哦。 Let's start with bring home the bacon。 好，字面上的意思当然是把培根带回家。那最早哦开始用这个片语的时候到底什么意思啊？我们看第二个句子， can be traced back to。好，所以这个惯用语呢可以回溯到12世纪。好， can be traced back to 就是回溯，请记住要用被动语态。那回溯到12世纪怎么样呢？当时的意思是什么？哦，原来是丈夫如果好好对待自己的妻子哦，当地的教会会给他们培根来当作鼓励奖励。好，那再来我们看到第三个句子。那随着时代的转变，这个惯用语呢意思也不太一样了，演变成什么？形容赚钱养家啊， bring home the bacon。 比方说第四个句子， After years of studying, Alice finally brought home the bacon with her new engineering job。 那原来啊， Alice 她已经呢毕业啦，那从事呢跟工程相关的工作，给赚钱养家了。
All right, before we get into the second section, let's take a listen to it one time.
Another useful expression is in a nutshell, meaning to summarize something concisely. This phrase is linked to an ancient account by Pliny the Elder, which describes a miniature version of Homer's Iliad that supposedly fit inside a walnut shell. When you want to give a brief summary of a meeting, you might say,In a nutshell, the meeting was productive, and we reached an agreement. A third expression, have your cake and eat it too, refers to wanting two conflicting benefits at the same time, an unrealistic expectation. It dates back to the 16th century and reflects the idea that you can't consume something and still possess it. For example, you can't expect to stay out late every night and still perform well at work. You can't have your cake and eat it too.These idioms show how everyday food experiences have become part of our language. Understanding where they come from makes them easier to remember and helps you use them naturally in conversation.
There are so many expressions out there in the world. You can butter up your boss by, you know, saying complimentary things to him. You can have all your eggs in one basket, where you're not really...thinking too far in the future, so you're putting everything into one focus, and you could have some danger there, because if you drop that basket, then your eggs might break. And so, yeah, there's all these fun things. I've got so many more. But as we see in this section, one that we're going to look at now is another useful expression is in a nutshell, meaning to summarize something concisely. In a nutshell, inside the shell of a nut. So like you think of a walnut,And if it would be inside that, that nut, that would be inside the nutshell. So in a nutshell means to summarize something. It means to finish it up quickly, to give you all the basics and most important, context of a story, perhaps. So for example, if you want to summarize a story, you don't say, well, once upon a time, Johnny went here, and you go through hours and hours of telling the story. You're going to give maybe 10 sentences.After you've read this story that will explain everything that happened inside the story. Same if you were summarizing a movie. You're just giving the important, most important things in a very brief description or very brief analysis of whatever it was. And here it's something that you're going to do concisely. I did not just do that very concisely in my description where you're just, you know, you're making it very clear and you're making it very simple. But yeah, I didn't do that, but maybe you guys can do that. If you watch a movie, think of about 10 sentences of how to describe that movie, and then you are summarizing it concisely.
Yeah, 10 or even one or two sentences
might
to
be
really
better.
Be in a nutshell. One thing you can example is the headline of a news story should give you the basic story in a nutshell, right?
Yeah,
it'll give
you
the basic idea, president does this, or something happened in this country. And then if you want to read, they'll have, you know, paragraphs, hundreds of words giving you the more details, more information. But in a nutshell, this is the basic idea in a small, simple, compact form that covers all the important stuff. Now, where did this expression come from, right? It's very useful to summarize or give a short version of something concisely, short and sweet, as we might say. But this phrase is linked to an ancient account by Pliny the Elder, which describes a miniature version of Homer's Iliad that supposedly fit inside a walnut shell.
Very interesting.
Wow, people have been doing that for a long time, apparently. Back to the ancient Romans, I believe Pliny the Elder was a Roman writer. Not sure if he was also a politician or a philosopher, but certainly a writer, one of the people whose work survived and allows us to know a lot about, much more about the, you know, Roman life. And so this is an ancient account. When we use account here in this way, we're not talking about, you know, your little file in the bank. I have a bank account at that bank. No, this is basically a story, a written record by someone. Going back to newspapers, when you read a newspaper story, that is one writer's account of what happened in that city or what happened surrounding that news story. When we read history, these are different accounts. You know, it gives us a good idea of what happened in history. But if we only get accounts or written, you know, versions of the story by a certain type of person, it never gives us the full story. So an account is basically one version of a story. So this is a story from Pliny. And in this story, he described, and I guess this is something that existed in his time, back in Roman times, a tiny or miniature version of Homer's Iliad. I think most people know that Homer, the great Greek poet, wrote two famous stories, the Iliad, the story of the Battle of Troy, and the Odyssey, which is the story of Agamemnon, or Odysseus's journey home from that story. If you want to see the Iliad, watch Troy featuring Brad Pitt looking magnificent. And I think they're going to release the other version, the Odyssey, is coming out very soon, directed by Christopher Nolan, starring someone as Odysseus or Agamemnon, who's the hero, depending on the Roman or Greek pronunciation. But this is the first of his stories, and this is 100 pages. This is many, many chapters, many, many volumes, this story. But supposedly, people say it has been reported that we don't actually have pictures of it. It doesn't exist in a museum somewhere. And maybe even Pliny the Elder never actually saw it, but he heard from a guy who talked to a guy who was in Corinth, and he saw this thing that came from Sparta, where someone had taken the story of the Iliad and written it so, so tiny and tiny and small that it fit inside a walnut shell.
That must have been a very, very big magnifying glass.
This is like a very interesting little side news item that they might have in the news today. There's that Taiwanese guy, and he used to like write stories onto a piece of rice.
Yeah.
Didn't he? Like draw pictures on a piece of rice. It's kind of like that. It's interesting. It's impressive that someone can actually take a, you know, 100 pages of a story and make it so small that it physically fits inside the shell of a walnut, which is, you know, a couple of centimeters across. But there you go. So in a nutshell, someone actually had that whole story, and it actually fit in a nutshell. So it was really it came from an actual instance where someone did fit a story in a nutshell.
That is really, really random,
and
you would never know that. But it does today.
Yes.
It is very commonly used. For example, when you want to give a brief summary of a meeting, when you want to wrap up a meeting and say, this is what happened, you might say something like, in a nutshell, the meeting was productive and we reached an agreement.
Yes. Luckily, you give this short version in the spoken form.
Right.
Not in the written or
you're not
or
writing it on the
form.
Nutshell. You don't have to sit there and draw it. So the meeting was productive. It was effective. It produced results that we can then move forward with. And as a result of those results, we are able to reach an agreement. We're able to agree on something and do something, you know, further on down the road that will make us lots of money, probably. A third expression, have your cake and eat it too, refers to wanting two conflicting benefits at the same time, an unrealistic expectation. So if you, you know, like rainy days, but you only want it to be sunny out, then you have two conflicting attitudes about the world. But here's two conflicting benefits. So you don't just want to have a cake and have it in your possession. You also want to eat it, but that then you don't have any cake left. So wait a minute. There's a problem here. There's a conflict. Things don't work out. So those are those two conflicting benefits, right? And they said this is an unrealistic expectation. So it's not something that is possible for you to have. These two conflicting things are not possible for you to have. It is unrealistic. Kind of like it is unrealistic for you to hope to become a full-fledged professor in a university, but to have never attended a school in the first place. It's probably an unrealistic expectation to be able to do that.
Mm-hmm. Now, what is the history of this one? Well, it dates back to the 16th century, so we're going back to the 1500s, and reflects the idea that you can't consume something and still possess it. Well, yeah, that seems pretty logical. This is where the expression dates back to. It originates, that is where we can trace its roots or its origins to, back to the 16th century. We don't actually have the name of a writer or someone who first used it, but yeah, maybe around this time, you know, cooking was becoming fancier. Beautifully decorated cakes were something that, you know, wealthy people could afford, and that could have been a fashion or a vogue at the time to, you know, give cakes or have cakes that are so beautiful, almost like a work of art. And I think we might have all had that experience in a restaurant where you get the food and it looks so nice, you don't want to kind of put your fork into it and break it, like that sundae that looks so beautiful and perfect. I want to take a picture. Now I feel guilty by destroying it and eating it. Well, that's the idea that we're talking about here. You can't eat something or consume something and still possess it, still own it, because, of course, you're destroying it by eating. Now, we use it, of course, in many other ways outside of, you know, pastries and desserts. It says, for example, you can't expect to stay out late every night and still perform well at work. You can't have your cake and eat it, too. That's a great example. You can't expect to be a party animal and still be up, you know, feeling great at sort of 6:30, 7 in the morning to go to work, in the same way that you can't stay up all night playing video games and expect to do well on the test tomorrow because you didn't put in adequate time studying. So you can't do both things. You can't reward yourself in both ways when of course those are in opposition. You can't have your cake and eat it too. I always admit, I never liked this expression because I'm like, yeah, I have my cake. I say thank you, I blow out the candles, and then I eat my cake.
I want to.
What's the problem here?
I possess it, it's in my belly.
I don't want that cake sitting in my fridge for 3 months. It's going to be disgusting. But I get the idea.
I do get the idea, too. And these idioms show how everyday food experiences have become part of our language, right? Understanding where they come from makes them easier to remember and helps you use them naturally in conversation. For example, if you don't know the background of an idiom, you might not know the right time to use it, although that's not always the case, because if the idiom came from 500 or 600 years ago, then the way we use it today might be different or might have changed, much like the bring home the bacon idiom that we discussed at the beginning of our article today. All right, everybody, let's take a moment and listen to our Chinese teacher now.
再接着我们看到第三段第二个惯用语咯。好，是 in a nutshell, 总而言之，言而总之。那意思就是很简要的去把一长串的事情说明。好，那我们看一下第二个句子。This phrase is linked to an ancient account. 好，这里的 account, 请同学注意哦，跟金融无关哦。啊，讲的不是账户。这里所指的呢是叙述、报道或者记录。好，那跟谁相关啊？这一则记录是跟谁相关的呢？原来是 Pliny the Elder, 大普林尼，大概呢是 西元23年到79年这段时间的人，他是一个古罗马的作家、博物学家、自然哲学家。那他描述过荷马史诗《伊利亚德》的微型版本。那据说这个微型的史诗哦，非常的小，小到呢足以装进核桃的壳里面 ,walnut shell。那这个故事后来就演变成英文成语，这个片语说 in a nutshell。那其实就是把复杂的事物呢缩小或者呢简明扼要的概括出来。好，那我们下面哦其实是有一个给一个例句的 ,in a nutshell, 简单说哦，言而总之 ,the meeting was productive and we reached an agreement。好啦，所以哦开完会之后呢，我们可以说这个会议哦非常的 productive。productive 是什么意思啊？就是富有成效的，成果很丰硕的。为什么呢？因为就是 reach an agreement, 大家同意嘛，有共识了。好，那 productive 是一个有用的字，我们造个例句， I had a very productive morning, 今天早上过得很充实， I finished all my homework and cleaned my room, 功课写完了，房间也打扫了。好，那我们再看到今天最后一则惯用语， have your cake and eat it too, 字面上的意思当然呢就是什么，诶，又有蛋糕又有的吃啊，可是很奇怪啊，蛋糕吃了那怎么还会有呢？好，所以这就是一个什么等于是两难的状况嘛，就是鱼与熊掌不可能兼得。好，所以这种期望是 unrealistic。 好，这个惯用语的来源可以回溯到 it dates back to, 用现在式就好了， it dates back to, 回溯到16世纪哦。好，那接下来我们来看一下，其实啊这个惯用语哦，有的英国人会说 You can't eat your cake and have it too。 好，那这个应该很容易了解吧，一旦把蛋糕吃掉了就再也没有蛋糕了嘛。好，那我们再给同学另外一个例子哦，比方说假设有的人哦一天到晚只顾着打电动不读书，然后还期待考试拿高分，那我们就可以说 You wanna get top grades without studying while playing video games all day. You are trying to have your cake and eat it too. 就是你想要鱼与熊掌同时想要呢都获得。好，以上是我们针对前三则的惯用语所做的中文讲解。See you tomorrow.
I bet, Mike, that we're going to have more idioms and expressions tomorrow. What do you bet?
I bet we are too, and they're going to be delicious, so let's all come back for that.
All right. For English Digest, I'm Leah.
And I'm Mike.
Bye.